regrets being married. But in those days, every girl's aim was to be married because there was no way to earn a living once you grow up. But you must pretend that you don't want to leave your parents' home. And then they hire a woman to teach her what to say during her crying.
Right.
And okay. I remember all this wailing and all the noise. And then the matchmaker arranges for a woman to carry her. We were on the second floor. To carry her down to the carriage. And then the brother-in-law had to dress up in the formal traditional wedding clothes with a sash and a bow of red and tied across the waist. And then he had the fan, and he was to knock three times on the carriage.
Oh, yeah.
And then claim his bride. And then the trousseau contained everything. Your grandmother's trousseau had beautiful clothes. But among the clothes, the interesting clothes, very interesting to me, and to my playmates, because we played in them. And was the wedding garments and the traditional white skirt with the grains and the money and different things sewed in different corners. And symbolic of different customs way from way back when. And then she also had the thing, what would you call it, to carry the babies with.
With a cloth.
Like the Indian babies. Carry them on the back. And the dark blue one, it was white, but the tying part that tied on her shoulder and the waistline was in dark blue, I remember, for every day at home. But if she went visiting with her baby, then she put on the red one with the gold gilt embroidery and the little mirrors and very pretty. And then they also give her the shoes, the boat bottom style. Have you seen those old-fashioned shoes?
Yeah, only in the show, plays,
museum. Had them. And they were enameled in the bottom. But they were wooden, like Dutch shoes, only you could rock in them. And of course, I've had many a fall, but it was fun. And then they have what they call danji kek. The one heel shoe, and the heel was in the middle. And then at the bottom of the heel, that was carved out and made a very pretty design, either in a flower or a symbol. And that was in colored silks. And then the underwear was even beautiful. All done in by hand. And of course also, and then they were very long. Sleeves never show the hands. And then you fold your hands this way.
Gee, that's very interesting. And so
and to think that all happened in San Francisco.
I know. That's you live in Chinatown, San Francisco?
Yes, well, I was born at the opposite the prison entrance of the prison old Chinatown Hospital. On Jackson Street and Trenton Street.
You wouldn't know that. Right. Uh-huh. Would know that.
Just born right across from the entrance. At that time, it was a family house. Four German families lived in it. And it was a red brick with a white filling in between. And in the earthquake, that tumbled down. And that's why we had to go to the Hunter's Point. And Hunter's Point was too crowded. Then my father had to take us all, me with my measles and smallpox and everything, in a forepay. You know what that is?
Tell us.
That's a Chinese fur coat.
Okay.
He wrapped me up in a Chinese fur coat with the furry inside and the silk outside.
Did you have friends down at Hunter's Point or relatives so that he decided to go there?
No, no. The Chinese had to go wherever they could find a place. Everybody had to go wherever.
Many of them went to Golden Gate Park, for example.
Well, everybody went any place they could find a place to stay or find some water.
I see.
See, Hunter Point has water.
That's right.
And Golden Gate Park has water.
I see.
And so did China Camp, Marin County, have water. Chinese, and the Chinese in their settlement in California was very wise that way. They either followed the railways, the railroads, or they settled near the water. That's why Chinatown was so near the bay. The bay used to be right there practically at Portsmouth Square.
Best part of the city too, weather-wise.
And most accessible for transportation.
Yes.
I didn't realize the Chinese were that wise.
Would you know if perhaps your father decided to go back to China after the earthquake because of the earthquake and the destruction?
Yes, because of and his age too. He was just coming, getting along. And then he had he had put by enough money so they would be comfortable.
So he was planning to return anyway?
No, he wasn't, but he finally did. But he felt that family should be settled in China, back in the old village, where his roots were, where his forebears were buried. The burial in Chinatown in those years and in those times was a ritual.
Yes.
And how you buried them, and how the corpse faced east, west, or north, south, had something to do with the future generations.
Yeah.
Right.
If you had the Taishan Xinsang, whatever that is,
yes.
And he spent a great deal of his money on those soothsayers.
He did?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
They came with their long psalms, you know, and said, well, I would advise you to bury this person this way and that person this way. All the time they were feathering the nest, you know.
Wow, naturally.
Did your mother go back then in 1906 and never came back?
She went back with all the with
children.
His mother.
And never came back?
Never came back. And I never saw her after that. Never saw my mother after I was 5 and a half years old.
So when your father decided to go back in 1906,
November 1906.
Yeah, but when you were 14 years old, that was
then
the
he said, oh, you've been separated from the family long enough. You must rejoin the family.
Mm-hmm.
And without further ado, he placed me with a cousin on Jackson Street. And
would you like some sugar?
My jokman, Samuo,
yeah,
was established by one of my father's cronies.
Oh.
See, Samuo is over 100 years old.
Yes. We were
and
there
it's
last
still
week.
Going there and still going good. Same little hole in the wall.
Is this run by same family still?
I don't know, but that is the original kanji shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the most popular one and makes the best kanji.
Mm-hmm.
Was it there before the earthquake?
Yes.
And they just rebuilt in about the same place?
Yes, and still just a little hole in the wall. But it does the land office business. Interesting place.
So you decide not to return with your father?
As I say, I suspected what was going to happen. Having his mother and my other oldest sister, I'm the number three daughter. I said, I'm ready for the auction block. I better not go if I know what's good for me.
That's when the bandits, when they went over there.
No, 1918.
That's when the bandits
That's got 3 years later.
Oh, yeah.
So you stay
It was 1915 when I went to Miss Cameron and Cameron House. But Miss Cameron, I called my father. Oh, this boarder that my brother-in-law had, he contracted for the boarding. There were no unions, and it was a paternalistic company.
Mm-hmm.
See, like the Honolulu Hawaiian Islands were at one time. And the natives were very happy under the paternalistic system.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, their actual physical and medical needs were taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, they're better off than now.
Plus
and much more satisfactory, and they were happier.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was with the American people in Siskiyou County, the northernmost county of the state.
Yes, indeed.
And it was a very interesting state and an interesting part of the state. We had snowstorms, we would be snowed in and be so happy, you know, don't have to go to school.
Uh-huh.
And overnight, you know, it would storm so heavily that we couldn't open the door in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Until the snow began to melt or somebody could manage to get outside to chop it down.
Ah.
Chop the ice and the snow down.
Your heating was by firewood?
Firewood, yes. But the company provided housing and food and hospital. That's how Dr. Tebbe, a daughter is still in Oakland.
Uh-huh.
And Dr. Fred Tebbe, the brother of Dr. Will, two brothers, were the doctors hired by the company to mm-hmm. take care of the company employees.
Oh.
So they had medical care, their board and room was assured,
mm-hmm.
and saloons were legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the saloon took their pay, that was all right,
uh-huh.
because the company deducted from their weekly or monthly paycheck
uh-huh.
right there at the office, at the business office, before they got the checks.
Uh-huh.
And my brother-in-law was assured of his money.
Uh-huh.
And he contracted then for the labor.
Mm-hmm.
And indentured relatives from his village.
Uh-huh.
And he would provide the money to bring them over.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd have to stay and work for him until they worked off that debt.
Uh-huh.
I think you'd call it indentured,
yes.
wouldn't you?
I think
yes.
You would, yes.
Uh-huh.
How long was the term of contract?
Well, whatever the cost.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And then he opened the first laundry in Weed, California.
Uh-huh.
And then the first steam laundry later.
Uh-huh.
And it was very interesting.
Very
but I think it was very interesting. The American life is different too, you know. And I lived in a log cabin, a real log cabin. Not one that's made for show or
mm-hmm.
or for the market.
Uh-huh.
And that was while we were waiting for the company to complete the house for us to live in.
I see.
But it was not. It wasn't very comfortable. It didn't have a wood floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then the clay or cement that he used had chipped off in spots, and it was very cold.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, not comfortable. Romantic to read about, but not comfortable
no.
to live in. It's like the desert island. I found it out when I was in Borneo, because that was sort of like a desert or island.
Uh-huh.
And it isn't what one romanticizes
uh-huh.
about it.
Uh-huh.
How far did you have to go to school in those days?
Oh, when I was in Igerna, I had to walk 3 miles. And I went to a one-room schoolhouse.
And in the winter, too, I guess.
Oh, yes, 3 miles. But 3 miles is nothing to a kid in those days. But children today won't walk 3 miles.
Yeah, yeah, right. And it must have been about, what, 2-3 days from San Francisco up in those days?
Well, I think so. But, of course, we didn't come to San Francisco. I didn't come to San Francisco till 1915, when the 1915 Jewel... the World's Fair,
uh-huh.
yes,
and the Tower of Jewels was the
right.
highlight.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that's the first time I remember coming back to San Francisco, and San Francisco had rebuilt.
Uh-huh.
How did you come to Mrs.
And then about Miss Cameron now.
Miss Cameron.
So then one of the boarders in my brother-in-law's boarding house
uh-huh.
Told me, his name was Jimmy something, I think he was an Irishman. And he said, you know, my sister is very much interested in a very interesting woman by the name of Miss Donaldina Cameron. And she has a home where she helps the Chinese ladies and little girls. And he told me that little girls were sold and young girls were sold for the commercial market and all that. And you know, children have long ears, and mine were rabbit ears. I heard all this. I put it away and wondered about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my father has written to my brother-in-law and said he's coming in about a year or so, and this time I must go.
Ah.
And I didn't know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
And the strangest thing of all is that at the Weed Hotel, we ran all the eating places in the town of Weed.
Is that right?
All, practically all, anything that was worth 5 cents was run by my brother-in-law or my sister, the two of them.
And they hired
we had the Weed Hotel dining room, the Florence Hotel dining room, and the club lunch counter, and the El Monte lunch counter and dining room. And those were the major places to eat. And then in the El Monte, there was a window you could open. If somebody wanted a drink, you just pulled open this door. And it's sort of like a roller top desk. You pull open the door and order the drinks for the customer. And I think a full course dinner was either 35 or 50 cents.
Real man style too, I guess.
Oh,
railway workers.
Oh, the workers would have for breakfast they'd have three eggs or more and a stack of hot cakes and a piece of slice of ham or some a breakfast steak with it. And they called it java. About three cups of java.
Did you ever?
But they worked hard.
Did you ever cook any Chinese food for those guys?
No. But during World War One, when I was in my late teens, and everybody had the flu, for some unknown reason, I didn't get it. Ever since then, I get it every time if somebody even walked by with it.
Oh,
any virus, I had all of them. So.
Anyway, you were saying you were fascinated by Mrs. Cameron.
Well, he told me about this interesting woman and how she was helping the helpless children and the orphaned children also.
Yes.
And I just thought, well, I'll put it away in some cubbyhole. Then they come in handy because I'm going to have a problem coming up.
You know that you knew that you cannot stay with your sister.
I knew that my father was determined to take me back that time. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know whether he was going to realize money out of it or he was fulfilling his duty as a father. Mm-hmm. I think that was the main issue because he didn't need the money.
No.
So, but I still would be on the auction block.
Right.
Prize jersey, you know. The name, Bessie, always made me think of some nice fat cow. So that's why I put it B instead of Bessie Churn, M.D. My broker, who does some of my business for me now, he said, why did you use just B? I said, well, first, they become a captured patient. And secondly, if they see Bessie, they hesitate. Even women sometimes hesitate to go to a woman doctor.
Mm.
That the prejudice isn't over yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I put B in Jern, and before they know it, it's kind of embarrassed to turn and run, you know. So if they sit down, I try to make them feel at home, and before you know it, they're quite willing and feel at home with me. And they'll say, I've only talked to you for about 5 minutes, but I feel like I've known you all my life. And you know, that is one of the arts of medicine.
Yeah.
Is to
make the patient
establish a rapport with your patient and confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I do love people.
You can tell that.
And I'm very sincere when I say, when I listen. Normally, I call myself Hubert Horatio the second, because I just can't stop once I get started, as you already know.
Wow, it's very interesting. Yeah,
so
we're enjoying it.
Oh, yes. So you decided...
Oh, and then I was speaking of viruses,
uh-huh.
and that I catch everything so easily. First, I'll finish that about being 17 and... And everybody's sick. Everyone's sick. Even my brother-in-law, May and Jean, and everybody was sick. And the waitresses were sick. The cooks were sick, most
everybody
of them.
Then
the troop trains would come through. Weed was the main town where the main line trains came through, the troops had to be fed. And I wasn't large enough or tall enough to manage that huge range. But I'd get a box and stand on it and fry steaks and cook all the short orders and whatever we had to feed them with. And I even had to manage the money. Everybody else was too sick.
All right.
I'll be doing.
So I had that.
That's learning very quickly.
Well, it was out of necessity.
Pressure.
But that was good. It gave me an idea about money management. Because I hadn't gone to Lux yet and had dietetics and institutional management and that sort of thing. So speaking of high school and jumping back to high school, I went to Lick for geometry and algebra and Latin. And then in Wilmington, I took the pen and ink drawing, which was a great help in my work at medical school later, but no one ever dreamed of that. And then at Lux, I learned to sew and to design clothes and how to dress and what styles were becoming to me, and learned to be hostess. We cooked, we had cooking class, domestic science we called it those in those days. And we cooked these meals, and we were permitted to invite our parents to tea, at the luncheon, and to dinner, and what formal, informal, and believe it or not, that came in handy when I became the wife of a Chinese diplomat.
You have to entertain.
I had to entertain hundreds.
No experience is wasted.
Oh, it seemed that way.
That's great.
But it was just providential that it all happened that way.
How did it work out that you managed to go to just these schools? It was again
Miss Cameron guided me.
Guidance.
She knew that I was I would be better off in a private, semi-private school, an endowed school, as I say, because just for materials, I needed at least $25, and before 1920, in the teens, you know, $25 was quite a bit of money.
Yes.
So I went to the dean. I said, Miss Otto, I'm going to have to drop out, or we didn't call it drop. I'm going to have to quit school. Mm-hmm. And she said, why? And I said, well, I want to go to work and save some money so I can come back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she said, no, that won't do. That won't do. Of course, I was already president of my class.
Mm-hmm.
And
At Lux.
Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, no, that won't do. Well, I have to talk to the Board of Trustees. So she talked to the Board of Trustees and said, we have a valuable student. We can't afford to lose. She's in all activities, athletic. I got my gold pin in basketball, volleyball, and girls' baseball, and my block letter. So that it was nice. I couldn't get up and get out to that part of town early enough to get it the tennis courts. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to study late as I had to work, go out to work for business girls.
Mm-hmm.
I would cook for a girl, women who were business girls. I'd cook their dinner and wash the dishes in the apartments above 920.
Nice.
Just around the Fairmont Hotel room. And that helped me to pay for my expenses. But the expenses got more expensive, and so did my clothes, because my sister had died in 18.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I didn't graduate till 22.
Oh, yeah.
So I almost had no support from high school on.
Well, you didn't start your schooling until you were 10.
Oh, my brother-in-law said, no, don't educate the girls, or they'll sell their husbands.
That's old tradition.
My lokong,
See,
the tradition was not to educate the girls.
Right.
So, oh no, this one is a smart one. No, I can't
don't
let her
educate
go to school. So he wouldn't let me go until I was 10.
Oh. So you start late.
I started late, but fortunately. I bought the one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah.
I used to get through my classes and my studies very easily and very quickly. And I'd help Miss Pineal. Mm-hmm. And Miss Pineal was my first teacher. And she was the sister-in-law of the postmaster in Igerna, where your Aunt May was born. Huh. And in the house where she was born, there was no running water. It was pumped in. Mm-hmm. There was a pump in at the kitchen sink. Mm-hmm. And if we needed water, we had to pump it. Uh-huh. And then the first young man, a boy that was interested in me, was George Brookfield, who became a train conductor. Uh-huh. And he was killed, he had an accident and killed. I asked when I went back one time, whatever happened to George Brookfield? But of course, I never knew anything about this boy and girl thing. Mm-hmm. In those days, girls weren't conscious of the three-letter word. Uh-huh. Until they were almost marriageable age, you know. Uh-huh. And my brother-in-law was very superstitious. And when I was sick, probably with flu again, or a virus of some kind, or a sore throat, George I used to enjoy playing with the boys more than the girls because their games were more interesting and more challenging. Uh-huh. Although I did play girl, you know, play lady. Uh-huh. We used to call it play lady. Uh-huh. And did admission to our shows that we put on in my sister's dresses and high heels and Chinese clothes and all. Uh-huh. The admission was so many pins, straight pins, because we had to pin them up. And then we'd make cakes with bran that was fed to the cows. And we made frosting by beating up soap suds. Uh-huh. That was the frosting on the cake. Ah. So I played both with the girls and the boys, but I liked the boys play better. And fortunately, I guess I could keep up with them or they would have said scram. So George evidently took an interest in me, and when he heard that I was sick and couldn't go to school, he made something like a camphor chest. Mm-hmm. Oh, my brother-in-law took one look at that. Oh, she's going to die. Here's the casket. This boy's been inspired to build her a casket. And he wouldn't receive it and had a fit and told the boy to go away. But you see, superstition.
Yeah,
Of course.
Especially that when you and your sister got together and cut off the...
Oh, after the revolution, yes. See, the queue was put on the Chinese people by the Mandarins, Manchus.
Yeah.
And that meant that we were subjugated by them. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I were much more modern in our thinking. And we tried to persuade Jean and May's father to cut off his queue. He was so used to it. That he missed it, and he didn't want it cut off. And he didn't feel the pressure to have it cut off either, because there were no other Chinese around. And so, but in the afternoons, because he was an older man, between after lunch, when the big rush was over, and until supper time, when he'd be at the cash register, he wouldn't work, he'd take a nap. So my sister and I got together and said, we'll just snip it off. So when he was sleeping, off went the queue. You know that little ditty the children sing, ching, ching, Chinaman, sitting on a rail, and off came the train, and off went his tail. And on came the train, and off went his tail. It was what the children sang. But I wasn't insulted by it, because I didn't realize I was Chinese, really. And the children didn't mean anything by it. I mean, they didn't mean to be insulting or anything like that. So I just grew up like any average American child. Only we had even more privileges, because the mainline railroad men came by and knew us all and ate at the restaurants. And knew us, and then the... there was a switch engine in the town, and I remember the name of the number of the engine, 1117. And we were allowed to ride on that switch engine in front and play in the caboose. That's their lounge car,
uh-huh.
The workers' lounge car.
Uh-huh.
And then there was something they used to go and fix railway tire nails, great big things, about 5 inches long or 7 inches long. Any of those nails that were sticking up would be repaired by the men who rode on those hand carts. They had to pump themselves onto the railway.
Oh, the railroad spikes. Yeah,
had to go and repair the spikes or put in new ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we kids, if we saw an empty one, we had a great time. And then one time, when I was in Sisson, which is now Shasta City, I've noticed that when the train stopped, there would be two bangs. And I found out what made the noise. They were little packets of gunpowder or something.
Uh-huh.
This is the end of a cold.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I talk, sometimes I'll get a coughing.
Oh, wow.
You have a throat lozenge, you know, or anything like that.
No, she can talk.